Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Well, searching the news, I don't think in the last 5 minutes we've had somebody charged with sexually harassing anybody.
Well, it's only 11:05 Central Time.
Right, and I haven't refreshed in 5 minutes. So, huh?
It's only 11:05 Central Time, so give yourself a little more time.
A lot of these stories are, the stories you're hearing about are the high-profile ones, like Senator Al Franken and some others, Harvey Weinstein. But there are a whole lot of people that are being fired from their jobs or in trouble in some way or another that are not as high profile as them, but still well-known people in their industries. You're reading about this on a daily basis.
You can't get any more high profile than Matt Lauer.
Matt Lauer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Charlie Rose.
Yeah, Charlie Rose. Wow.
But I'm saying that's trickling down. There's a lot of nervous men right now who are afraid somebody's going to Me Too them.
Right.
You know.
That's right. Hashtag Me Too. That's
yeah. So there'll be some more politicians and business people and Hollywood leaders, get in trouble, be fired before this is all over. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Walker. Walker, our Today's Issues Facebook page, what do you got on there?
Yes, I've posted a couple articles about the New York City jihadi attack that happened this morning. Fortunately, the only injury that I'm seeing, maybe a few civilian injuries, but the terrorist seemed to suffer the most severe injury. So, and then I posted a Breitbart story, which referred to what we talked about earlier, which that is a never-Trump ex-Jeb Bush staffer admits to planning the Roy Moore story in the Washington Post. That's from Breitbart. They have more details there.
And we're live video streaming the show?
That's right.
We're live video streaming the show. If you want to wave at us, Steve's waving, Steve Jordahl. We're at Today's Issues Facebook. We're live video streaming. Steve Jordahl, good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Tim.
Ed, Walker. Before we get into the news that you brought with you, anything new on the New York situation?
Nothing that you guys haven't covered. They know who the guy is. He's from Pakistan, I think.
Is that Bangladesh.
I'm sorry. Bangladesh.
One of Bangladesh. Over there.
And I think there were four total people injured in this thing. They have video surveillance of this guy blowing himself up accidentally. I saw the video. It's
now Ed said, according to CNN, had the bomb detonated as he had planned it to, it would have been catastrophic.
It could have been very, very bad.
Because we're talking about Times Square,
right?
Rush hour, morning traffic, people going here and there,
and, right? And if you were listening to our news over the hour break here just a couple minutes ago, I was reminded that the ISIS had put out a little flyer or a picture saying Times Square, you're next. This might have been that attempt.
Hmm. Well, it'll happen again. It'll happen again. Anyway, go ahead.
I'd like to update you guys on the fires going on in Southern California. There's several of them, and I'm going to run down this very quickly in order of severity. The biggest and most dangerous fire right now is the Thomas Fire that you've been hearing about. It's covering more than 230,000 acres. It's only 15% contained. It has destroyed or damaged nearly 1,000 structures, and 18,000 more are threatened right now. And the Lilac Fire in San Diego County is 4,100 acres, 80% contained, about 200 structures destroyed or damaged. Then there's the Skirball Fire in Bel Air. That's near... that's the one that's threatening all the celebrity homes. If you've been watching, all these celebrities are going out and saying, my home is burning, it's threatened. It's only 422 acres, I say only, and it's almost all contained, but six structures damaged or destroyed, another 12 damaged, and then it goes on down. There's one in Sylmar, there's one in Santa Clarita, there's one in Riverside County. So really things not going well for firefighting down there. When you think of this huge fire, Thomas Fire in Ventura County, Santa Barbara County, it's only 15% contained. And it's many, many, many square miles in diameter. It's just things are not.
I heard the avocado, what do you call it?
Farms.
Crops were severely damaged or destroyed. They grow a lot. People don't realize now this fire. Evidently, I'm not as familiar, nearly as familiar with the state of California as Steve is, because Steve hails from there. But people don't realize. Most Americans do not realize how much of our food is grown in the Central Valley of California.
It's really amazing.
Yeah.
Right. None of these fires are in the Central Valley, but they're
right.
It is huge. The Central Valley is the breadbasket, they call it, of America. I lived there, actually, for about 5 years.
In the Central Valley?
In the Central Valley, yeah.
Wow.
Fruits, vegetables.
Raisins, by the way, are big from there. A lot of fruit and vegetables. Down there, now the avocado, this is Santa Barbara and Ventura are more on the coast than the Central Valley. They're north of L.A. And in my mind, Ventura kind of starts L.A. You go over, if you're coming from the Central Valley, you go over I-5, you go over Hecker Pass, and then, I think it's Hecker Pass, but you go over the mountain and you get into the L.A. Valley, and then it's just one big, huge city until you get to San Diego, basically, in my mind. Going down the coast, Santa Barbara, Ventura, they're all kind of separate. You have Santa Clarita, Camarillo, and those places, and then you get into Los Angeles proper, and again, it's just miles and miles of different cities. Most of these are not in L.A. The Bel Air fire is the one that's Skirball fire, they're calling it, in Bel Air is the one that is closest to downtown L.A. or Bel Air.
Is it true that some on the left are blaming President Trump? Am I getting ahead of me for a different story?
No, you're not. The governor of California, Jerry Brown, tweeted out over the weekend that President Trump does not fear God because he is not doing anything to curtail global warming, which what he said was this fire situation in Southern California is now the new normal because of global warming. So they're tying the fires to global warming. They're blaming Trump because he's not doing anything to prevent global warming. And Governor Moonbeam has the gall to say that he doesn't fear God.
That President Trump doesn't fear God.
President Trump's been in. Let me get this right. President Trump's been in office less than a year, and now all of a sudden the fires in California
are his fault.
Are his fault?
Yeah, mm-hmm. They play a little loose with the facts.
Wow.
When it comes to global warming.
Okay.
But yeah,
they also said, I believe, in the same press conference that California needs more federal tax dollars. They need more federal money, federal aid, to build up infrastructure.
This is what Jerry Brown said.
Well, they might need more federal aid to deal with the damage from these
fires.
Yeah,
but infrastructure isn't going to prevent wildfires.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
Well,
I don't know what...
Yeah.
You can't. If there was something that man could do to stop those wildfires, don't you think the federal government would come in and magically do it?
Well, except that
they solve so many problems.
Right.
And I can't say this to be the case with any of these fires specifically, but having grown up in California under the threat of fires, mm-hmm. There's a big debate over how much you should manage your forest. Some of that includes cutting down parts of forests so that you can cull out the trees so that it's not such a tinderbox when it comes to fires like this. And other people say, no, we don't want to, you know, hurt the forest by cutting them down. And there's a big debate over that.
Mm-hmm.
And I stay up at nights thinking about that, too.
I bet you do.
About how many trees we should cut down.
Do you?
Or not. Yes.
You wake up in the middle of the night, go out and hug the oak tree?
In a cold sweat. I'm sorry. I've been pretty sarcastic today.
Well,
both of y'all.
That's very unlike me.
No, but I think you just took over my – you just went ahead of me. If we were playing a sarcastic basketball game, Ed just hit a three.
I hit a three-point.
At the buzzer. Ed just hit a three at the buzzer to beat Tim.
But it's only the end of the third quarter, so Tim, you have time to come back.
Okay.
With some more sarcasm.
All right, next story.
The Supreme Court had arguments last week. We talked about this on the Masterpiece Cake Shop. And I happened to find the recording this morning, and so I brought you a couple samples. This is what we're going to hear. We're going to hear two samples The first one is going to be number cut six, Brent. It's going to be Kristen Wagoner, who is the lawyer for Jack Phillips, the owner of Masterpiece Cake Shops. And she's being questioned by Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And she asked if Jack Phillips would be free to sell a pre-made cake off the shelf as opposed to one that he designed specifically for a gay wedding.
What if it's an item off the shelf? That is, they don't commission a cake just for them, but they walk into the shop, they see a lovely cake, and they say, we'd like to purchase it for the celebration of our marriage tonight. The Colorado law would prohibit that. Would you claim that you are entitled to an exception?
Absolutely not. The compelled speech doctrine is triggered by compelled speech, and in the context of a pre-made cake, that is not compelled speech.
So what she's saying is basically anybody, a gay couple, is free to come in and buy a cake off the shelf. I'm just not going to use my artistic talents, my speech, mm-hmm. to design something that says, yay, gay marriage.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Tell you what, if Jack Phillips doesn't win this case, and you know, if I had to make a prediction, he will win 5-4. That's my prediction, based on the questions that I read from Anthony Kennedy.
I have one of those, by the way.
Is a swing vote. Well, the Q&A from him?
I have one from Kennedy. Okay. This is Justice Anthony Kennedy, and he's questioning Frederick Yarger, who is the attorney for the gay couple, asking if he or the Colorado Civil Rights Commission disavows a statement that they made. Listen, the statement is up at the beginning, and then you can hear the conversation.
Commissioner Hess says that freedom of religion used to justify discrimination is a despicable piece of rhetoric. Did the commission ever disavow or disapprove of that statement?
There were no further proceedings in which the commission disavowed or disapproved.
Do you disavow or disapprove of that
statement? I would not have counseled my client to
make
that statement.
Do you now disavow or disapprove of that statement?
I do, yes, Your Honor.
Basically, they were saying, the Colorado Commission says, when you say your freedom of religion means you can't do a cake, you're discriminating against gay people, and that's despicable. It's despicable for you to use your freedom of religion to actually practice your religion. And the court caught him on it, and that was Justice Kennedy, who many people say is the swing vote in this, and who say many people say the arguments went well from his perspective.
You know, I just have to say, thank God, and I mean this seriously, thank God for law firms who defend people of faith in our country,
right.
Because what attorney argues before the Supreme Court has a lot to do with the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
How articulate the argument is and how factual the argument is at the Supreme Court, the justices really lean on that.
They do.
And I heard Sandy Rios, who's a morning talk show host here, attended the Obergefell oral arguments. And one thing she said when leaving was the natural marriage side of the case. The attorney arguing that was just very inarticulate, kind of stumbled, didn't really know the answers to things, and that could sway the justices one way or the other. So thank God for
Kristen Wagoner is her name.
Alliance Defending Freedom.
Yeah, Alliance Defending Freedom attorney. I met her in San Jose when I actually set the two of them up.
Mm-hmm.
So since we're on the topic, you want to say something?
Yeah,
Tim?
I do. One quick point is: had Hillary Clinton won the presidency, all would be lost on religious freedom. We wouldn't even be talking about this case because we wouldn't have Neil Gorsuch as the Supreme Court Justice to replace Antonin Scalia. We would have another far lefty on the Supreme Court, which would have tipped the balance to the far left side for decades to come, especially should she get another one or two. Mm-hmm. Would Hillary Clinton have got two Supreme Court justices? So I'm just saying that this was the main reason why Christians went to the polls and voted for Donald Trump, 83%, I think, mm-hmm. to 17 yep. or something, percent voted for President Trump, then candidate Trump. Not that we approved of all of his behavior and or his tweets. It's that we were sophisticated enough to see what was at play here, what was going on here. And when you were left with, I'm saying this to the never Trumpers.
Right.
And to the our fellow Christians who want to say, look, you're so hypocritical. You voted for President Trump, and look how he acts. And how can you be for that? You are a Christian. You should have a higher standard.
Right.
Well, I did have a higher standard. It was Ted Cruz and on behavior. And Ted Cruz lost in the primary. So what's my second choice? This is me personally. I'm speaking for me firstly. What's my second choice? Give me my second choice. Well, the Republican Party voters across America have selected Donald Trump. So he won the primary, fair and square, true?
Absolutely.
So I'm left with Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton with the generational future of our country at stake. Well, guess what? Those two choices, there's not a choice there.
Right.
You know, a conservative has to go with Trump in that situation. And, yeah, he's got some question marks, but you have to roll the dice.
Many of those Never Trumpers will probably come out if this case ends up being in favor of Jack Phillips and religious freedom. Yeah. They will celebrate that decision and still say that they shouldn't have voted for President Trump, but you know, you're gonna have to come back and tell them it wouldn't have happened had we voted for a third party candidate or not voted. Or
I just get the false sanctimonious behavior of some of the Never Trumpers, some of whom are fellow Christians, who want to write. They can't wait every day. If President Trump does something that's a little on edge or something they feel like they can criticize, they'll criticize it, and then they want to beat us up over the head, those who voted for President Trump, and act like you have compromised the gospel of Jesus Christ by voting for President Trump. Or they're saying the same thing about Roy Moore in Alabama. Ed, do you compromise the gospel with your political vote?
Well, I can't vote in Alabama because I don't live there.
You can tell us about anyway, right?
The problem, I think, for the Never Trumpers, those who are Christians, is that this is all a little messy because the New Testament does not really specifically address a culture in which Christians are allowed to influence and decide what kind of government they have.
All right.
They all lived under a first century empire where no Christians got an opportunity to vote. So what we have to do is take general principles from the New Testament and try to figure out what a Christian in our society, in this setting, is allowed to do. And so you have to have some grace for people who have different opinions.
No, we don't. No, we don't. If you're Russell Moore and others, you and Eric Erickson, some of these guys who...
You mean the Russell Moore that we've reached out to on numerous occasions and offered to drive up there and meet with him, but he won't even return our phone calls?
Southern Baptist.
That fellow Christian.
Yeah, Southern Baptist.
Here's the thing. I don't know. I think the folks we're talking about are the ones who've created this false standard, and that is that voting for someone, checking their name on a ballot in November, is somehow endorsing every last thing that they've done since they were conceived.
Yeah.
And that is a false premise. You cannot judge my moral, you cannot judge my spiritual state because I check a box in November, and you somehow, I'm responsible for who I voted for, what they've done their entire life.
Also, you know, politics is messy. And it's not always it's a lot of gray there. It's not always black and white necessarily. And I would just say this, with, as I've said here before, in church leadership, you have a right to expect doctrinal purity and scriptural obedience. And you should look at that when you're electing a pastor or an elder or a deacon, or somebody to teach Sunday school. Those things do matter, and you have a perfect right. You can, and in my view, you can't take that same standard and apply it to general American politics. You just can't. Because in order to win elections, you have to have a broad swath of the American public. Right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Especially a presidential election. So if you want to say, and I'm all for high morals, but if you want to say this is the only these standards, and if anybody doesn't live up to those standards, I'm not going to vote for them no matter what. And you're willing to say, even if it means losing the Supreme Court for a generation and losing our religious freedom and America's demise, I don't care. I'm not going to vote for this person because he said this about women. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
I just think that's a false choice that we're told we have to make. Mm-hmm. And I don't appreciate the Never Trumpers trying to make us seem like we're surrendering our standards.
Right.
Because we're put in that predicament. That's what I'm saying. Steve, go ahead, brother. What you got? We got 5 minutes. Lay it on us.
Well, since we were talking about the Supreme Court and courts, it's a good thing that the Supreme Court has 9 justices and not a jury. I'm going to put this under a new file. This is called the sleep file. In the jungle, the mighty
jungle, the lion sleeps. Great song.
Well, it seems last week federal judges in 2 New York trials, one involving charges of sanctions evasions and the other concerning allegations of corruption in the international soccer community, were dismissed. The jurors were dismissed because they fell asleep. They were dozing off. One juror was visibly asleep through the first week, his head popping up and down. Judge Berman said when the juror was asked during jury selection what he did in his spare time, the juror said sleep. So maybe it's not that big of a surprise that he was falling asleep in the middle of the trials. By the way, on the Supreme Court, every so often we heard a comment from Justice Ginsburg. She speaks up so people know that she's not sleeping or maybe even dead because she often looks like she is. I have no doubt that maybe at times she does sleep during oral arguments. But
didn't she fall asleep during an inaugural State of the Union?
Yes. All right. Yes. So that from the sleep files. Hey, let's introduce another new file today. It's coming to be Christmas time. This is from the Grinch Files.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a hero.
At the College of Brockport in New York, there's a coffee shop there, and it's run by a student club, and the students are part of the Office of Diversity and Inclusion, and they're posting a long list of suggestions of how they can I'm sorry, you know what, this is not the coffee shop. There's a coffee shop story too, which I will tell tomorrow if we have time. This is just the College of Brockport, whose Office of Diversity and Inclusion has guidelines for Christmas creativity. And it says displays that feature exclusively single-themed decorations may be well-intentioned, but they can marginalize those who celebrate other religious and cultural beliefs during the season. So if you're going to put up, for example, a nativity, that's pretty one-sided. That's pretty narrow thinking of you, and it's going to exclude others.
This is that is just so ludicrous.
That from the Grinch Files.
You know, there's a famous scene from one of the Pink Panther movies where Inspector Clouseau has a pen. He picks up a pistol that's been used in a crime, and then one of his assistants wants to borrow the pen, and he says, get your own pistol pen. And I just say, listen, you have a problem with the nativity? Get your own holiday.
There you go.
Yeah? Get your own holiday.
There you go.
That was quick, yeah. That was good.
Yeah. Ed Battagliano, ladies and gentlemen.
That's the only serious thing Ed has said today.
He'll be
here.
He'll be here 2 days this week, Wednesday and Friday. All right. Thanks, Ed, Walker, Steve.
A pleasure.
Check out our Today's Issues Facebook page. Post comments there on the stories we talked about. Stay tuned for Alistair Begg straight ahead with some excellent Bible teaching. And then Janet Mefford, and on with your day here on AFR. We'll see you tomorrow.